Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. I've been brewing this episode for a little while because it's just one of those things that when you think about the subject, when you hear the subject brought up in various ways, it's just one of those things that's really frustrating. We're going to call this episode Superior Guilt. Someone trying to demonize you for being superior to them. Because there's so many elements to this conversation, so many truths and perspectives to it. It's just so hilarious in some ways, right? We have this thing going around right now in 2018. It's been going on for a couple of years, but it's gotten hilarious. I mean, it's truly just hilarious. It's called white privilege. Privilege is a very interesting word because it's trying to not quite say what they're trying to say. But the math is in, right? The math is in on all these accusations. If you really want to go there, it's there. Race, race does have a side correlation to what they're trying to talk about. But in the end, I'm not sure race is as involved as one might think, because we find people in all races who are geniuses. We find them in every neighborhood. You could be a female genius. You could be a male genius. But the have-nots want the haves to feel guilty. And privilege is the insult. Privilege is the insult. Somehow you got this all given to you. You got your brain cells prearranged, which does happen in genetics, right? The more that your predecessors in your family that gave birth to you honed their brains, dedicated themselves, didn't mess around with life, got educated, went to school, or, you know, in a lot of cases, college is pretty fucking new for human beings, to be honest. All right, yeah, you've got some Greeks and some Romans that went and sat on the steps of universities. But in terms of the average man getting educated through a formal university, what do we got, 100 years? Maybe? I mean, of it just being an absolute thing you have to do. But still, to this day, 2018, some of the most incredibly brilliant, successful, creative, sweet-minded people don't have degrees or didn't have them when they became what they became. So how did they get their intelligence? Well, they probably have a fairly decent genetic line made up of all kinds of races. Steve Jobs, for instance. No one would ever contest the brilliance of Steve Jobs, the cleverness, the wittiness, the insightfulness, him being able to see a need that needs to be filled and how to fill it. His minimalist designs of all things made Apple what it is today, along with Steve Wozniak's equal brilliance in hardware and software. Both men came together and made an amazing thing. Well, what's Steve Jobs' lineage? What's his race, man? Well, he was adopted. So the people that took care of him in Northern California, I think it's Los Altos or something like that, Palo Alto area, those aren't his parents, genetically, biologically. They're definitely his parents, spiritually and psychologically. But his real father was Syrian. What do we know about people from Syria in the 21st century? Oh, well, they're so underprivileged and so whatever, but they have to flee to Europe to get what they need because they're so brilliant, right? This is the democratic side of things and the EU side of things. Essentially, it's a backhanded way of saying they're so ignorant. They can't run their own country. They can't find ways to feed themselves, to shelter themselves, so they have to come over to Europe and take it away from the white privileged. But superiority in an individual comes in all different flavors, doesn't it? What the Democrats are trying to do is secure their vote with the minorities of the world. Not really knowing much about them, of course. The taco truck vote, as they say, right? South America has wanted to take over North America forever. I mean, for 150 years. Not sure what drives that. I've heard the white superiority thing and the white privilege thing in so many words since I was a little kid living in the Midwest. Living on the East Coast as a child. When my father would get to the end of the month and we'd have 50 bucks to last us 2 weeks, I would hear about how privileged we were or how, you know, we have it all spoon-fed to us because we got blonde hair and blue-eyed babies, right? I grew up in a little tiny town with almost no one in there, you know, 10,000 people on average. Where was the huge university? Where were the professors, the Feynmans and the Oppenheimers and whatever walking around my street? No, they didn't exist. It wasn't like there was this, oh, you're white, here's all this stuff you get. No one forced my uncle to learn what he learned that he taught me. When I had the World Encyclopedia delivered to my house, no one remotely forced me to get in there and start studying nuclear physics at 9. Nobody did that. Nobody forced me to learn how to play instruments. No one forced me to learn how to code at the age of 12. When I asked my uncle if I could help him draw video games at 11, and I had to do it in binary, no one said, go help your uncle do this. This is what you have to do. We are white. Go do that. For every white kid I know who's really smart, I can name 10 that are dumb as a fucking bag of hammers. But privilege goes in a bunch of different flavors, right? Superiority goes in a bunch of different flavors. Let me give you a quick example that you can side with immediately. Let's just say you have a fairly decent-sized family. You've got 3 siblings, you know, you and a couple brothers and sisters. If you're an only child like myself, you've got some cousin families with tons of kids. And you will undoubtedly know that one of the children in the family was the best-looking kid. The best-looking boy, the best-looking girl. And you sat and you watched over time as that individual, because whatever their shape, size, and sculpture of their face happened to match the current day definition of beauty and sex and whatever, they sailed through life, or they're sailing through life. Perhaps they let their beauty give them accolades to a point where they don't have to study in school, so they're dumb as hell, but they're good looking. Well, the nerdy kid off on the side studies her ass off or his ass off because they don't have that facial feature to rely on to create an income. I've known maternal twins, boy-girl and boy-boy, where one of them just clicked with some piece of technology, whether it be a piano or a computer or a baseball bat. They clicked harder than the other sibling, the other identical, well, not identical, not Madagasi twin, but just the other twin. They came out just moments later, or even a couple minutes before, a couple seconds before. And the resentment starts, right? I've personally experienced, parents that are envious of my accomplishments at times. And, you know, one of them struggled real hard with it and would sort of sabotage everything that I did. I saw that. I saw the child in the adult and went, oh my God, this is crazy. I got a baby for a parent. A jealous baby. And in the moment that you work really, really hard to become superior at something, really talented, really knowledgeable, you know that the only thing that the other people have to do who are envious of what you have is get off their fucking ass and go do something about it. Right? In today's generation, everybody wants fame for doing absolutely nothing. Well, I want that. I want that, therefore I should have that. And if you tell me I can't have that right now, well, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to go listen to all the other emotional people around me that tell me I can have something without actually doing anything to get it, without actually becoming special or superior in any way, shape, or form to the rest of the population. Musical instruments are very interesting in this realm, because when you pick up a guitar, especially a guitar, after watching someone like Buckethead rip the shit out of a Les Paul in the most funky way, in the most metal way, in the most ballad way, and you just watch his hands on the neck, you're like, oh God, he makes it look easy sometimes. You get yourself your guitar and you sit down, and you go, I am totally dedicated, man. I'm going to do at least an hour a day, right, to match his 8 hours a day or 12 hours a day of playing. And you get in there and you realize that the level of technique is insane. How you press down the strings on the neck, how you pluck them with your right hand, if you're right-handed, and learning all of your chords and learning all your progressions and trying to figure out what the masters have done before you. You start to sweat and you start to go, oh shit, this is way, way more than I have time for, depending on what age you are. I think, you know, 95 to 97% of the population that gets in a situation similar to that one, they understand and they concede that either they're going to have to dedicate themselves a hell of a lot more to this art to get there, or they simply put the guitar on the wall and go, all right, it was a neat little fantasy I needed to try. Now I know why Buckethead is amazing. But there's that ranty group of utter fucking children who do the equivalent of the wah, you know, the baby that's just crying and crying because they just can't have what they want instantaneously. It's not a Matrix Neo plug in the back of the head and I know Kung Fu moment. And so and some of them cowardly continue to look around for the shortcut. I mean, yeah, you knock yourself out if you can learn how to play guitar in 2 days. The illusion today is that there is a concerted effort around the world to even the playing field with everyone, to balance the haves and the have-nots. It is a ludicrous goal to begin with, in an instantaneous manner, right? No one has to physically move from point A to point B to become more intelligent. You don't. Everyone in the world has a cell phone. And I mean, everyone has a cell phone. If they do not have a cell phone, that would be the easiest thing that mankind could do, is give someone a cell phone. Now, obviously, cell phones cause cancer, and the towers cause more cancer, and 5G is going to fuck us all up. But other than that, we could give them some means of electronic access to paperwork that they could read and learn in their native language, right? Moving them from Africa to New York or Syria to New York and putting them up in a big penthouse is not going to fix anything. The reason why I'm recording in my garage today is because the house behind my house was rented by a family from, I guess, a non-privileged part of the world, and they lived there for a couple years. They so destroyed the house inside because of their primitive nature that the house has been under reconstruction for 6 months. Whoever owns that house is losing the monthly nut, and they've been losing it for 6 months. They've had to gut and rebuild every single room. They have cut enough wood back there to basically tear the house down to the studs and build it back up. But the family that lived there lived in Huntington Beach, California. You mean to tell me there was some huge physical constraint for them to get educated, to treat a house the way it should be treated? No. It's a cultural thing. It's a cultural value system of what is important in life. If you don't value intelligence and skills, and perhaps some sort of etiquette and rapport with the neighbors around you, well, then I guess whatever you are today is whatever you're going to be. I grew up in a town where at least 30% of the men use a spoon like a caveman, right? They put it like this, and they shovel that shit in their mouth. And when you mention it to them, they'll just say, it don't matter. My family was a little bit more refined. They looked at that process and said, wow, okay, maybe if you're a little kid, you can, your hands are teeny, the utensil's huge, and you're building your motor skills, so we'll let you go maybe a couple years. But once you're around 5, you're going to start holding your silverware properly. My father was on my ass probably around 3. I am so glad he was on my ass. But was my dad Mr. Rockefeller Jr.? Mr. Rothschild, Lord Rothschild Jr.? No. He was broke as a goddamn joke, trying to make ends meet, realizing, well, at least the one thing I can give my child is a little bit of etiquette, a good vocabulary, and some manners. How much does that cost? How much superior genetics in your brain do you need to just simply pass down common decency? Later, in my 30s, I was hanging out with Robert Llewellyn, the comedian, and he and I would do all these sessions together, and I watched him do the British methodology of fork and knife, and I said, man, that's really interesting. You don't switch hands. And he goes, yeah, you know, this just lets you kind of stay steady with what you're doing. And then I asked him across dinner, I said, how do you do it? How do you eat like that? How do you work that fork? How do you eat peas on the back of a fork? And he said, well, you know, you usually don't eat them by themselves. Usually, you know, you use something else to block it, and then you put some stuff on it. You stick it to something else, like mashed potatoes, and you work it in. And I sat there for an entire lunch and ate on the back of my fork. And now I love it. I absolutely love it. Guess it was all that white privilege that made that possible, right? Couldn't have possibly learned that just being a human being, right? Anyone can learn anything in the world, wherever they are. History has proven this over and over and over again. Take any region of the world that has been repressed by its leaders. There was always an underground group of folks that practiced the religion that they believed, that taught school. You know, when the Spanish, French, and Arabs brought all of the slaves to America, the black African slaves, and dropped them off for the, you know, the oligarchy plantation owners who are from Europe, the handful of them that owned slaves, right? Well, white people were doing the same thing on different plantations. The slaves got disoriented, obviously. They got reoriented slowly. And they began to secretly teach each other things that they weren't allowed to teach each other because the plantation owner didn't want them rising up and becoming intelligent and realizing that tyranny on any microscopic level is still tyranny. And eventually it led to the point that when the blacks were finally starting to be freed up in the north and eventually freed in the south, we have amazing inventors and generals and commanders. There's even, you know, there was a black president at one point in time before George Washington for the colonies. Extremely academic African males who didn't natively speak English, right? They had to learn English, you know, over the centuries because they had their native language ripped away. Obviously, by the time any of this happened in the 1700s and beyond, then the native language for their tribes was English. But let's get back to the theme. Superior guilt. All right? So you're the pretty one in your family. You got the right body, the right face. You have the dimples. Your smile's awesome. Your teeth are awesome. Your body just sort of naturally stays in a nice shape. Oh, sure, you can destroy it if you want to. But your amount of effort to stay amazing is negligible. But what if your relatives, your mother and your father and your brothers and your sisters, during every family function, sat around like a bunch of Democrats and said, you're the outcast now. And you're like, what? Why am I the outcast? Because you turned out better than us. Better being obviously a relative term to the times. How would that feel? That they arbitrarily pick a measurement and say that that is the measurement by which you are deemed superior. You are deemed thus privileged. A lot of black families deal with this because a lot of black families in America have white blood in them. I think almost all black families that have been here for more than 200 years have white blood in them. And every once in a while, that white skin pigmentation surfaces a little bit more prominent than the other siblings. And so you'll have a very dark sibling and then a fairly light-brothered citizen or light brothered sibling. And they are frowned upon. Malcolm X talked about this. Malcolm X talked about having problems going into various black communities because he was a light-skinned brother. He got along really well with all races, probably because of his charm and his amazing intelligence. Was it fair that he had to feel the burden of being genetically born a particular way? Just a pigmentation on his skin, for God's sakes? And the more he educated himself? It was Alex Haley's book, you know, he had sort of the Harlem street world where he became street smart, and he was very handsome and very physically apt, meaning he could kick someone's ass. He was a bookie. Gets busted, goes to jail, converts to Islam, you know, does things like reads the dictionary, reads the Quran, pops out, and becomes Malcolm X, the guy that we see more prominently in history books. Continues to take interview after interview and just is stunningly fucking brilliant. Has a perception on racism that is as healthy as it possibly could be, which means, you know, the most beautiful thing he ever said was, I'd rather have a white man tell me that he's a racist than to look me in the face and lie to me that he accepts me when he doesn't. Going down that line a little bit further, you got Martin Luther King. I don't think anyone would argue he's a handsome bloke. And for the rest of recorded history, as long as his speeches remain documented in tomes for us to read in the forever future of mankind, he will be regarded as one of the most brilliant human beings to ever be conceived and born and live on this planet. The speeches that he gave were off the cuff, just pulled out of his mind. Every word profound, every single sentence relating to the next, the overall theme and arc of what he was saying was profound and important. But what if everyone said in the black community, look at that smart-ass brother. You know, he's walking around and he's exuding his big brain. You know, you don't even say exuding. You know, he's showing off his big brain and we just hate him for that because we'd ever got a brain that big. And they shot him down before he ever had a chance to make the impact that he made. I dare say segregation could probably still be going on today if that man wasn't allowed to do what he did. But today it is rooted against the white man, right? Eddie Murphy did a really funny bit where he dressed up like a white guy. And they did this skit. And I think Dave Chappelle did something very similar to this. Maybe it was Dave Chappelle's version that was more poignant, but he went to a bank and he applied for a loan, and because he was white, the bank loan officer was just turning down a black man before when he walks in the room, who had all of his credentials and all of his collateral, and he says, I'm just sorry, I can't give you this loan. You know, makes up some excuse. And then he sits down and they just open the drawer and give him tens of thousands of dollars in stacked cash, and they say, oh, don't even worry about paying it back. Wink, wink. And what they were trying to say was, this doesn't happen. Not that it does happen. And I think what's interesting is, before the internet, one could really get a pretty decent ego. Because you didn't have the ability to reach out into the world and say, am I the best? How good am I as an artist, as a programmer, as whatever the hell you are? A singer. But now you get on the internet, and whatever you do, it has been my experience that you can find someone insanely better than you. And it's humbling. And it's healthy. But let's turn the tables just a little bit here for a second. What if every time you went to school, a college especially, let's say you're really lucid as a human being and you're like, man, I really need to know this information. And you search the world for the finest mind you can find to teach you what you need to know. Male, female, doesn't matter what you are, but you need to know something. And you have literally been on this pilgrimage for a long time. And you walk into the room, and you're so pleased. They're there, and they're sitting at their desk. Maybe they're just kind of cinching up their papers to take off to the next class or get ready for the next class. And you're just about to have the conversation. You're like, madam, sir, I have been searching the world for you to give me the information that I need. I want to take your classes. I want to have a quick conversation with you as to which class I need to take to find out this exact piece of information. And the conversation goes about four sentences. Hasn't even reached a minute. And all these assholes that run around with their white privilege bullshit rush in the back of the room and lynch the person that you have just found to get the information you need to become intelligent, to become more intelligent. And let's just say that you aren't white. And you're trying to better yourself. Let's just go with this ridiculous assertion that white people have all the information that you need, which is bullshit. Okay? You don't go to a major university and you walk in every room and every teacher is white. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Well, let's go with this stupid assertion. But they lynch your professor. And they take them away and burn them at the stake because of their mob rules, idiotic brains. And you, whoever you are robbed forever of getting that information because you got burned at the stake by a bunch of have-nots. Perhaps that person walking in the door is from Uganda, Cameroon. And they have finally figured out what is keeping those countries from being first world countries. And they're like, oh my God, if I just get this one piece of information from someone who understands first world countries, I can transform my own country. I don't even want to stay in your country. I just want to stay long enough to get educated and go home and bring that beautiful wealth of information to my people. But there's a lynch mob out there trying to undermine everyone with this luck of the draw information. Hopefully right away you have a knee-jerk reaction against the analogy because you're saying to yourself, well, that's bullshit. There's plenty of geniuses in every culture and every race. And then you would have to, like me, get to the point where the assertion of white privilege is simply something that's been fictionally made up to demonize the progress. What's the deal with fat shaming these days? What's the deal with that, right? Well, one person has no discipline with their eating habits and therefore becomes obese or morbidly obese. And they never want to be called out on it because they obviously look in the mirror and they don't feel proud of themselves. And I'm not talking about full-figured people who are big people, right? When a woman is 6 foot tall, she is and proportionate and maybe voluptuous. It's a different algorithm than what we're talking about. We're talking about someone who's maybe 5'2", but they're 3 feet wide. Guys with gigantic pot bellies. They're suffering physically, trust me. They have all kinds of problems. They have hemorrhoids because they weigh too much. They don't breathe very well. They haven't seen their genitalia in years. They can't bend down to tie their shoes. Very basic things. Going to the restroom is a chore. But those of us who can take care of our weight, we still struggle. You know, you hibernate in the winter, you put some on, and you cut it off in spring. That's what I'm doing right now. We're living in this moronic loop of cognitive dissonance, and it's trying to sort of spiral up like frosting on a cake, right? When you're making an ice cream cone, you have to go in circles and circles, and it just keeps building and building until there's that little swirl on the top. But we're still in the rapidly accelerating phase of utter lunacy and idiocy right now. And the saddest part is that we're allowing this stuff to take root in legislation around the world. 72 genders? Are you fucking kidding me? You know, and the only way they get up to those numbers is, you know, the guy that wants to sit at home at 48 years old and live in a diaper while some family wipes his ass every day. That's a gender, man. Somebody wants to dress in furry outfits. That's a gender. No, it's a weird fucking thing you're doing on top of your gender body. We have orientation differences. That is something a little more concrete. A man likes a man, a woman likes a woman. Those are concrete decisions about how they want to live the rest of their lives. We called the other things fetishes for decades and decades and decades. I was once renting a room from the people I used to go to church with. These were church elders. They were pretty progressive folks, you know, and I was talking to the mother, and it was during the 90s when the grunge was just starting to hit around 1990, 91. And I forget the woman's name, but she was a very popular singer for a very short period of time. She was a white privileged girl from Seattle. And she made some raunchy lyrics, and, you know, she wasn't using any dirty language, but the things that she was talking about were a little seedy for a church community, regardless of how liberal you are. I hated the music, so I never played it, but her kids were playing it, and she eventually called it out and said, you know, I don't know if I want that played in my house. And I looked at her with a sympathetic face. I said, yeah, I know what you're saying, you know, but think about it. We've had this sort of lyrics pretty much since the 50s. You know, there's a lot of metaphorical sexy stuff in the 40s and 30s as well, but they just kept it so far out there in metaphor that it never really offended anyone. The kids didn't understand it anyway. But I just took a split second to explain to her my view on it, which was that, you know, this is where kids are today, and, you know, if the parents reject it, then the kids reject the parents, and it's just one of these nasty little loops. And she just looked at me and she said, not in my house. My house doesn't have that. I get to choose what's in my home as a frequency for my children to learn and to listen to and become a part of. She goes, I don't want my kids feeding their brains this stuff. And she said it in much better terms, much better, you know, phraseology. I'm paraphrasing her poorly. But there was a moment there. If I could videotape my face in reaction to her face, it would be a priceless moment where yours truly went, oh yeah, you can actually do that. You can actually police what you take into your home. What's beautiful about living in California is that I'm surrounded by a bunch of different cultures and races. And I get to know them. I get to know their fathers and their mothers and their sons and their daughters. The groups that are trying to manipulate minorities into loyalty of a particular political party are the groups that only benefit if they can generalize an entire race. And I can't imagine anything more racist than that. When someone calls all white people white trash, it obviously angers, or at least turns the eyebrow of a lot of us white folks that are like, really? You think all of us are like that? But they want all Mexicans to be Mexicans, right? They all drive taco trucks, and they all overpopulate, and they're all frenetically macho, and blah, 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 blah. Whatever slangy thing they can say about the Latin American races, they just want it all lumped into one generalization. And why is that? Because they can control them better. They can control them better, and it could be the point where you walk up to, say, someone who's not like that within the Latin American origin and say, well, if you will become this stereotype and this generalization of which this Democratic Party wants you to be a part of, then you can get things for free. And then it comes right down to the self-respect and dignity of that individual to say yes or no. Well, okay, I guess I'll, you know, that sounds good. You know, I'm kind of going through a little tight spot in my finances. I guess I'll do that so I get some welfare. Or the person will say, like most of the people I know, fuck you, man. I work hard. I'm going to continue working hard. What I have is mine, and what I have is because of my own accomplishment. And the last thing I want on earth is you to think you control me, because you don't. But sadly, that's not how the world works, right? Sadly, there are large majorities of the surface of this earth that house populations that have been utterly and completely repressed, more so in the last 100 years. There are a lot of videos going around today. In fact, some of you have seen this of Iran back in the 60s, where women didn't wear burqas, women could drive, women were brilliant, women were scientists, and all these other things. And it was after the infiltration of the banking oligarchy, the World Bank, that they went in there and put people in charge that then brought back things like Sharia law, putting women back inside burqas, teaching them down to the core of their consciousness that to do anything other than be this way is blasphemy to Allah. And so they agreed to it for a little while, until they start seeing the rest of the world be a little more free. Some of them swear by it. They want to keep that tradition. Others are like, get out of my way, man. I'm smart. I deserve the privilege of being a human being, right? The Republic, your inalienable rights because you were alive as a human being. We know that the level of intelligence around the world varies drastically. Intelligence is obviously a relative thing. You have what I think is academic intelligence, which is probably the most widely varied metric that one can judge a particular group by. And then you have wisdom, the things that keep you happy in life. And that, I think, varies a lot less. And I would like to suggest that those with a higher academic brilliance have a less wisdom, and those with lower academic brilliance have a higher wisdom. Not always the case. There's always exceptions. There's always a gradient of these two factors coming together. But what is the little kernel inside the human mind that activates or is activated by these political groups that try to go in and usurp the very existence of these individuals, right? Do they want to run giant corporations and have the labor force be a bunch of, folks that don't know what they are worth on a daily basis, so they pay them the bare minimum and exploit them with long hours with no overpay, no time and a half, no double pay, none of that stuff. The feeling is that you're being taken advantage of. And the circular logic and the irony of this whole thing is that the person that comes in and says you're being had by people with white privilege is actually in the act of taking you for everything, right? Taking an individual and really pulling the greatest scam on planet Earth on that person. I have a very close friend of mine who's of Latin descent. He is more of the Aztec family. His family was on this side of the border, the United States, when the border closed. And so his family was never one that had to migrate from south to north. His family has endured major, major cases of racism from his own kind, as he puts it, because he was on this side of the border. Same bloodline. He could talk face to face with another Aztec descendant, the same exact blood distribution of quote-unquote race. And he says, his opinion to me was that, he goes, people south of the border are the most racist people I've ever met on the planet. They can't even look someone in the face with the same bloodline and find any kinship. And he goes, it's brought down by the government. It's brought down by the educational systems that teach them that. That if there's any suffering in the world, and there always is in all of our lives, that it's because of someone else. Right? The Kenneth Burke scapegoat theory. My stepfather has a PhD in critical literature and did his PhD thesis on Kenneth Burke. He wrote a book on Kenneth Burke. So I had a beautiful education on Kenneth Burke. Again, the guy comes from a non-wealthy family, simply decided to become smart, invested in his own intelligence, and therefore got a PhD. Right? No silver spoons. By the way, a footnote about silver spoon references. The silver spoon is related to the fact that silver, colloidal silver in general, is a healing agent for the human body. And so one of the reasons why they gave babies silver spoons is to feed them a light source of silver through the spoon so they would become healthy. So even if you were broke, the house usually had one baby silver spoon. But Kenneth Burke was a genius. I've talked about him a long time ago on the show. His take on education was, he went to the universities and said, you know what, this education sucks. So he asked his father to give him all the money that he was going to give him to go to college. And he said, let me sit at home. I'll use the money to pay rent. I'll buy the same books. And I will simply educate myself. But I'll do it much faster. And then I will go ahead and continue my own research and become noted in the academic communities for something very special, very unique. And one of his great contributions to life, there's many things that Kenneth Burke put out there. The power of language, for one. What you speak is what shapes your mind. It shapes you as an individual. It might be linked over to, just for those of you looking for an example in your mind, there's a lot of articles written out that say that people who swear occasionally are much happier and more intelligent than people that don't. One thing that Kenneth Burke pioneered was the scapegoat theory. It it was something that everyone understood. Scapegoating is what the mob does, right? The haves and the have-nots. Scapegoating is a process, and scapegoating has a result, a shift in the mind that is, you could argue, healthy for the mind. Before I go into Kenneth, let me just tell you a psychological reality that we have studied for decades and decades and decades, and it is, if a person constantly blames something else other than themselves for all their mistakes, the weird thing is that at least from a success standpoint and a wealth standpoint, they're more successful than people who constantly take it onto themselves. It's a weird thing because you wouldn't want to teach your kids to do that, right? You need to accept what you've done wrong so you can fix it and then live a more blissful, natural, homogeneous life with your surroundings so that you can become successful through working through it, right? But the first thing that Kenneth Burke pioneered was essentially the refinement of the scapegoat theory as it relates to individuals. Small groups scapegoating an individual, or an individual scapegoating something else. Could be an inanimate object, you know, the weather was the reason why I didn't make this thing happen and therefore I failed, but it wasn't my fault, it was the weather. And we know that happens, right? There's plenty of F1 races that have been won due to weather by various teams. And that was, that level of scapegoating, I think, was something that man just went, yeah. It's kind of like Darwin's stupid theory of survival of the fittest. You know, we all knew this for all time. Insects know that one, right? But the bigger one was the sociological version of his theory, which is that large groups scapegoat other large groups or individuals as to why they have suffering in their life. I think it's fairly well known, although not very well acknowledged, that when you wake up and you have a heartbeat, you could get off your ass and do something more productive with your day. You could learn something. I don't care if you have kids, a busy life, you sit on toilets, you have telephones, you've got a minute or two where you're not doing something, and you could use that time to get what you need, right? Okay. If you are in the area of the world where you have, unfortunately, by being a good person, allowed your country to be taken over by some financial coup, replacing your leadership, which then gets to the educational access that you have to become intelligent, to get what you want, to find out what you want, right? You could have all the wisdom in the world to be a happy family, but you can't pay your bills. Money is one of the most evil things on planet Earth when it comes to being happy. Because it is this bone-crushing pressure on all the citizens of your home. The little kids, well, they get accused of being unappreciative of food and clothing and stuff. You know, PlayStations. The kid can't get enough PlayStation games. The kid can't get a fancy enough cell phone. Their clothing isn't fancy enough when they go to school and the other kids make fun of them. And the parents in there going, kid, I'm doing the best I can, right? But the child has no conception of what it's like to make money. So build a whole family out of that problem, which happens in all races all around the world from time to time. If you're a minority in America, which means you're a majority where you come from, or that person comes from, then you can have someone walk in the room and say, you know why you don't have what you need? It's because of the white man. The white man is the reason why you don't have what you have. And some of you might say, well, you just mentioned the coup algorithm. Well, we know that white bankers did that. The Diaries of an Economic Hitman, that book, talks all about white men going in and taking over all of South America. Okay. But who did the coup? Who did the coup? Well, it was a bunch of white guys taking over Ecuador, Guatemala. It was a bunch of citizens that fell for this scapegoating theory that said, yeah, you're right. I'll take a little bit of money. I'll rush the city hall. We'll drag that guy out and cut his head off or whatever. He'll at least get on a plane and leave. And we'll put this, who are we going to put in office? Oh yeah, who the white man says is a good leader. It's part of the deal. They pick our new leader. And he or she is of the native country. So these countries are taken over by their own kind. And then the repression started. The IMF bank loans come in. Within a year to a year and a half, those bank loans can never be paid back because that's how they're designed. And all the mineral rights and everything in that particular country is usurped by European bankers. Who do you have to blame, man? America is currently fighting the same war that everyone else is fighting. The white man is fighting the same war that every other race is fighting around the world. The only difference is the white man really doesn't have anyone to blame. We're perceived as the tippy-tippy top of the whole intellectual spear, right? I don't think it's absolutely true. But that's the perception that white people even have of themselves. Yeah, you know, white people in California or Texas might be able to say, oh, well, it's all these Mexicans coming across the border that are taking our jobs. Okay, white man, you want to mow my lawn? You want to build all the houses and the skyscrapers in the local area? I don't find a lot of my white buddies lining up for those jobs. And I'm not personally convinced that if you could take every single quote-unquote illegal alien out of America that all of a sudden these white people are going to return to all these jobs. They haven't done those jobs in years. In the Midwest, it's still that way. People own lawnmowers for one thing, and they mow their own lawns. But even if they hire a young teenage kid out of high school to mow their lawn for them, which is what I did as a kid, yeah, they're white kids. They do it. But it's a transitional job. It's what you do as a teenager. It's never perceived to be a job that you're supposed to do at 50 years old. By the time you hit 18, some other kid who's 14 is taking over your job because you're running off to college. You're going to start your life. But in my neighborhood, the Mexicans that mow our lawns are in their 40s and 50s. Sure, there's a few 20-year-olds here and there, but there's a hierarchy you can tell. The older guys are in charge and the younger kids are doing what they're told. The one place where superiority is, there's a few, but the one place that it's really revered is within a company. It's also revered within a university. But within a company, there's a reality that universities don't have, which is making money. Those who can make money for the corporation, for the company, be a little tiny mom and pop shop, could be a giant, giant corporation. No matter where you are in the corporation, there's usually a technology involved, whether it be baking a cake or making a huge computer, a microchip or something. Those who are in, say, technical support know that they're probably not academically capable of walking into R&D and becoming an engineer. And so they think they're lucky stars that with their minimum amount of intelligence to answer the phone and guide people through problems, they're able to collect a paycheck, go home, have a wonderful night with their family, hopefully, and a great weekend, maybe a vacation or two a year, and it's what they do. And they respect the fact that there are people that dedicated themselves to knowing more. People who are creative and technical at the same time typically are at the apex, kernel, nucleus of a company. They're the ones that said, oh, I found a need and I made an iPod. Enjoy the billions of dollars paying your pension and your salary. As soon as you pop out of that paradigm, all of a sudden there's consequences for being intelligent. There's penalties. I've been involved in situations within the last couple of years where I have been working on some very intense technology. And I've been in environments where there were individuals that were building other things around me that were more meat and potatoes, like structures and that sort of thing. They're fascinating me with their capability of laying drywall, of cutting a carpet, of repairing a wall that just got bumped by someone, you know, not looking where they were going. And they make it look like it was brand new. Can't even tell. But I've had situations where these individuals will kind of be looking at what I'm doing, you know, with some other folks that are doing the same thing. And they're like, they're kind of looking. And then when they see you looking at them, you get one of two responses. You get this, huh, well, what are you doing? You know, explain it to me. And then I've seen folks kind of, oh, I don't care about what you do. I don't care what you do. A defense mechanism kicks in. And I'm the type of guy to grab every single one of them and say, come here, let me show you what we're doing. It's pretty cool, right? And they'll go, yeah. And I break down that barrier and they're like, I say, okay, well, I know this looks really complicated, but then let me tell you what these things do. This does that. This does that. This is how this is put together. All these different things. And all of a sudden their eyes are huge. One, I broke down this barrier between the two of us that I'm smart and they're not. I make sure that they understand that I revere what they do, and they get to say whatever they want about what I'm doing. But in the end, I say, look, I know this looks complicated, and definitely some brilliant people made these pieces and parts that we're using here, but a lot of it's off the shelf. If you wanted the job I'm doing right now, you could do it. And as soon as that those little triggers start switching in their brain, they start saying, oh my God, this guy is not quaffing this horrible superiority on me. In fact, he's sort of saying I could do exactly what he's doing. They woke up that morning thinking, oh my God, there's this complicated stuff going on where I'm at work. By the time they go to bed that night, they're like, wow, I could make a career change. With very little effort, I could learn how to do what they do. I know a kid who welds for SpaceX. All right. He's welding beads between steel, holding them together. He has to be amazing at what he does, because those welding points have to hold, at least for the illusion of the launch, right? He doesn't know how the booster rockets work. He doesn't know how the AI works. He doesn't know how the launch sequence works. He doesn't know anything. But he feels fine being what he is, contributing at his level. And he knows that if he went back to school and learned aerospace, he could get into those other areas. One, he's got the privilege of working for the company that can give him the job. And he's not white, by the way. The reality of life is that very few people on this planet, there are groups that have this problem, but I would say in a high, high 90 percentile rating of this world, they have access to information. And they can make the decision to go for it. I think I said in an episode about 5 episodes back, you know, go look up your heroes, male or female, and find out what underprivileged families they grew up in. And the fact that they took that problem of not having enough resources to do what they want with life, and they said, enough of this. I'm going to go get that extra thing. And they educated themselves. They got a talent. They got a trade skill. And they pulled themselves up out of the bowels of their world, and they went and succeeded. What I want you to do is, if you have worked really, really hard to be special in anything in life, you could just simply be the best parent. Don't allow anyone to guilt trip you for your investment. Don't allow anyone to guilt trip you for living in a world where you simply weren't repressed. If you commit crimes to get where you are, well, that's what you can feel guilty about, right? I've been extremely lucky in my life. Luck is hard work mixed with opportunity. I have been at the right place at the right time with the right skills to move into industries, to help people, to befriend people, to do things that very few people have done, all in one person, right? I was very fortunate that when I was younger, I was sent a collection of cassette tapes, which I've mentioned a couple of times on the show, and this dude said one thing that kept me out of trouble for the rest of my life. And he said, don't be the guy that comes into the conversation as the big know-it-all, even if you do know the answers and you can correct everyone in the conversation. I'm not saying that's me, but it's what he said. He said, don't be that guy. Blend in, you know? Really get into the moments between the lines of technical know-how. Get into the sociology of the beauty of friendships and relationships. You know, have a soul, basically. My father was actually really, really good to explain to me class reunions. And I know that a lot of you don't go to them, but for those of you who do, you'll know what I'm saying. My dad told me, he goes, you know, in the first reunion that you have, the 10-year reunion, you're going to bump into a lot of kids that are going to be bragging about what they've done over the last 10 years. They've been very successful. They are superior in what they do. But they make it a point to throw it in your face. And he goes, you're going to listen to that crap a lot. You're going to find out that no one really wants to talk to them. And then by the 20th anniversary, they're calmed down. They've been humbled by life. By the 30th, you're just happy everyone's alive, and so on and so forth. So when I went to my reunion at 27, I'd had this amazing 10 years of life. I mean, just phenomenal. And I had a buddy of mine in school that also had a very privileged thing where he got the chance to become a race car driver. And the two of us, because he and I were acquaintances, really. I wouldn't say we were like friends. I mean, you know, I we'd ever hung out together or anything like that, but we were very friendly to each other. And in a bizarre twist, he and I ended up standing next to each other at the end of my 10th reunion, talking to each other. And I said, "Well, why aren't you hanging out with everyone over there?" And he says, "Well," he goes, "everyone knows I race cars, and it just becomes about me. The conversation cannot get to anyone else. They want to know what I've done, and I want to know about them. And I don't really care about my career as much as they do. I mean, I love it, but it's not what I'm trying to do at this 10-year reunion. I want to see my friends." And I wasn't personally having that problem because no one knew what I did, which was nice. So I got to live in the shadows and just kind of go, "Oh, you know, I'm just hanging out. I'm having a good time in California. You know, well, what do you do?" "Eh, I do this little thing here." You know, it's like, you know, it was fun. My buddy was feeling guilty that he had developed a skill. He lost out on a large part of the reunion because he retreated away from the crowd. Because he had this guilt that he had, in their eyes, a better life than they had. When some of the girls, probably about 5 girls, I think, in my class had 3 kids by 27. And they had beautiful things called families. He had a lot of kids too. So he had the family and the career, right? I have an episode way back in season 1 called Loving Yourself. I mentioned it a few episodes back, and it kind of ties into this. There's this overwhelming guilt if you can look in the mirror and say, "I love you. You look good." It doesn't matter what you look like, my God. Whatever, the clothes came together, the hair came together. If you're a woman, the makeup came together. And you just feel good. And anyone that demonizes that beauty is an asshole. Whether it be a religious organization or a society take on things. You know, right now, it's one of these things, if a skinny girl goes up on a tarmac and models, and she looks amazing doing it, she's a bitch, she's horrible, but if, you know, a woman who's really overweight goes up and does it, they say, "Oh, look how courageous she is. Oh, boy, heap on all of the praise." I recently saw somewhere in the last 6 months some beauty pageant of some sort, or not beauty, it was like a modeling show, sorry. And there was one girl that went up who was very tall, and you could tell she was probably 30, 40 pounds overweight. And the coverage of this event was all focused on the big girl, the really thick girl. And I mean, we couldn't figure out what any of the other fashion line looked like because all they kept doing was going back to the big girl, totally, totally erasing the point of the show, which was to say, this fashion designer's worked their ass off to create this line of clothing. Let's look at it. No, it became this whole thing of, "Hey, girls out there, you should get totally overweight. Most girls aren't 6 feet tall. So if you're overweight and they're praising this girl's overweight and putting fat shaming in there to make sure you can't, well, then you can just get overweight. And you'll deal with all the physical troubles of that. And if you're not 6 feet tall to distribute that weight, you're going to have a lot of physical anomalies, problems, body function problems. One does not get fat by eating healthy food, right? You just don't. If you eat healthy food, it's hard to put on weight. It really is. So all the cholesterol, which creates a massive high blood pressure and heart failure, if that is something that we're trying to revere, I guarantee you there's a Rockefeller medical institution that's going to take all your money at the end of your life, which will be a very short one. If you slip, you don't have to feel guilty, people. Just slowly turn the boat around, that's all. Get your superiority wherever you can get it. It's in a bunch of different categories, you know it. We can become much more superior about how we communicate with other people. We can become much more superior about how we communicate with ourselves. Most of us have to make money, so you need a trade skill. Well, hey, go get superior with that trade skill. Go grab another book. Go grab your old books that you read in school, but maybe you didn't digest all the chapters really well. Get back into it again. Get fueled up. Become your best. And don't let anyone take your race, the pigment of your skin and the geometry of your body, and shove that into the equation and say, "This is why you're stupid. This is why you're not powerful in your life." What's really fascinating with the sort of white superiority that I hear you know, the criticism of this theory, right? Part of it's a criticism of someone's arrogance that they are superior, and that I agree with. The other half is that someone says, well, you don't deserve this because your race is better than mine, is kind of what they're saying, right? When I hear someone say white privilege, which I don't actually ever hear it in real life, it's only on the fake news, right? What they're kind of saying is, I'm inferior. And I'm inferior at a genetic level. And if you believe in evolution, for instance, then you're, if you say white privilege and you believe in evolution, then you believe that there are, it's going to take millions of years for you to become even remotely as good as these white people that you dislike, right? If you believe that God made you, then what's the deal? Why did God make you so inferior that you have to demonize another creation of God? Isn't that weird? But it all, you know, it's like when people like Tony Robbins teach us, and he did not invent this, but he said, if you're trying to program yourself to lose weight, you don't want to say affirmations like, I'm going to be thin. I can't wait till I'm thin. You say affirmations like, I'm glad I'm not fat. I'm glad I lost all that weight. I really like the way, you know, I maintain my weight. I like the fact that I eat healthy, even though you're not. You have to say it in a positive, otherwise your subconscious, which is a tiny child, doesn't know how to interpret that in a positive way. It will always say, oh, what you're saying is I'm fat. It's like when a woman says, do I look fat in this clothing, right? So when someone tries to lean on this have and have nots algorithm, what they're always telling themselves is they're the have not. And if they try to make it a genetic issue, holy shit, they are forcing themselves into a permanent designation of being genetically inferior. I talked to a guy recently that talked about Eastern religions, and he said that when someone's an atheist, what's interesting is in order to be an atheist, one has to acknowledge the existence of God to then deny God. I think it's a bit of philosophical hodgepodge bullshit, but I think he has at least a subconscious frequency to the mind that is saying that there is a God and I have to deny it. Because if you hear any affirmation that God exists to deny it, then your subconscious is going to believe that God exists. And then you're in this constant, tumultuous paradox of your brain saying, well, I believe, but I don't believe. I have to believe, then I don't believe it, right? If something doesn't exist, why even talk about it, right? As a society, we have to utterly stop this lunacy. We do. I'm hoping this episode will give you some tools to develop language of your own that is more compatible with the people that you might know that might spew this kind of bullshit. Are we all equal? I don't know. You know, I feel like being equal is sort of like saying, are the numbers 10 and 10 equal? Yeah, sure. But maybe someone is adding, you know, 5 twos together to get to 10. And someone might be adding a 5, a 3, and a 2 together. But they all reach 10. At best, that is how we are equal. We have our own strengths that get us to the sum total of whatever it is to be a conscious, living human in this vessel, right? If we truly have souls, then the only level of measurement or metric that we can have in human bodies is whatever the human body has experienced in its geographical location. But when you die and your vessel goes away, where does your IQ, if you want to track such a theoretical thing, turn into? I would say the same number as everyone else's. If there truly is a river of consciousness that is in the universe, well then, if you jump in the river and I jump in the river and we're both wet with knowledge, well then the only difference might be that you're swimming in the pool over there that is more of a cosmology version of physics of how God made the universe over there, and I'm swimming in love over here and I'm figuring out love over here. But you have the same quantity of knowledge per capita as I have where I am, right? The world right now is in a very interesting phase. There's probably the 99.9% of the world that's living in reality, and there's that 0.1% that's living in televised news of the world, the televised fake consciousness of humanity. Unfortunately, it's obviously dominated by the disinformation people out there. They're constantly telling you how your world works, how it has come together, how it exists. Scientists that aren't scientists telling you about how things work. People who take paychecks to tell you that there is no human biology at all. There's no gender biology. Right? There's psychological gender, and then there's physical gender. It's two different things, two different worlds. One doesn't have to negate the other, but perhaps we shouldn't use the same terms. There's distinctions about what we're trying to make a distinction about. There's the famous interview with that guy from CNN. He's a black guy. He's gay. I just say that so you'll know who he is. And he was interviewing Morgan Freeman, another black guy who's straight. And it's a famous interview where the guy, the obviously fairly privileged black guy who's become a news anchor, has done a bunch of things right in his life to get that job. And he was arguing with Morgan Freeman, saying, "How dare you tell black people that they can get out of the ghetto?" In so many words. Why would you set up false hope in a black person in the ghetto that they could ever get out of the ghetto? And Morgan looked at him and said, "Bullshit." He said it right on air. "Bullshit. How dare you tell anyone they can't become whatever they set their mind to?" And that is the crux of this whole episode. Bullshit that there's any limits to superiority. You know, I watched a migrant worker pound a ring out of a quarter. You guys have seen this. Some of you have seen this. They take a quarter and they punch a hole in the center. They drill a little hole in the center and they take a spoon or some other harder object and they beat the shit out of this quarter until they turn it into one of the most beautiful rings you've ever seen. It has to be a 65 or before, the pure silver quarters. But they pound this thing into an absolutely gorgeous ring. And they can get the ring gauge right on your finger. If they know how big your finger is, they just have a little ring gauge thing and they measure it or they put it on their own finger that matches your ring gauge or whatever. I will never in my lifetime pound a quarter into a ring. But man, it fascinates the hell out of me that that skill exists, right? Is it a big revered career in the world? Is it astrophysics? Is it going to the moon? No. But is it just as brilliant as someone who creates a freaking silicon chip? I would argue yes. It's amazing. I think you feel me. We have to undo this stuff. We have to undo the damage that these stupid theories make or have on our society and especially on our inner minds. And then we have to repair the damage that's been done. And then we have to educate ourselves in a way to communicate such that this stuff never takes root again. So when it comes up again, when some shyster or some person who's feeling sorry for themselves comes up with these scapegoat theories and tries to gain advantage through some ill-gotten gain, it'll never work out, right? You can be any race other than white, and you can sit around all day, and you could tattoo it on your forehead so that when you look in the mirror, it still reads correctly. White privilege is the reason why I don't have what I have. White privilege, white privilege, white privilege. Guess what's never going to happen as a result of doing that every day? That person will never get any smarter, never incur any more success than they would have succeeded if had they just picked up a book with their time instead of running around with this stupid mantra of them being a have-not and feeling sorry for themselves. If you want to take your body from being out of shape to in shape, well, pissing and moaning about people that are in shape all day long is never going to make your body look any better, right? And we know that. That's just like a given. That's common sense. So pissing and moaning about someone else's privilege, well, whatever. It's in your brain that that's the case. It's in your brain that that is the reason why you don't have what you have. But so, let's just say you wipe out all the white people. They get on a spacecraft because they're so intelligent and they make spacecrafts and they go out into space and they find a better planet. Some other guy out there in space. And so you're now left with your, I guess, any void. You're left in a total void, any lack of privilege because those people that have been usurping all the privilege are gone. But they left all their books behind. Or maybe we took our books with us, right? All of us white people who wrote all the only good books in the world, right? I don't know of too many white gurus out there. How about you? But now you're stuck with your own line of bullshit. I'm seeing you in a proverbial external you, not you. Or now they have to read a book. Now they have to get educated. Now they have to relearn everything that was discovered by all these other people that they thought were the reason why they didn't have what they had. Now let's just say you have a stopwatch in your hand. And you're going to run the simulator that God's going to give you access to watch how long it takes for those races that have been scapegoating other races to get up to where they need to be. I'm going to say there's a high likelihood that they'll just simply fall back to what they were and make that the standard. There really isn't a desire to be anything other than what they are. Because if there was, you wouldn't worry about anyone else having it. You'd go get it yourself, right? Any of my buddies who are famous for whatever they've done, they did not sit around in their houses and say, oh my God, there's other white people with talent that I want, and therefore I'm going to work really hard. Nope. They fell in love with art. They fell in love with drums and guitars and singing and composing. They loved science. They loved anything else. And they busted their ass because of their internal passions. Their homes are covered in what they do. They got careers in it. They weren't very good at the beginning, and then they got really good because they continued their passion. And race never entered their mind at all. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's video and audio for those of you who like to listen to it in podcast, or those of you who want to sit and watch me on TV. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but there it is. I do have pictures every once in a while for those of you who are pure podcasters. It's probably about one in every 10 episodes has pictures. There's a locked Facebook group with a link straight to it from the website, and there's also a Patreon account in case you guys want to contribute on a monthly basis. For those of you who do, thank you so much. Hopefully this has been useful. Very interested in your comments. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. Musical instruments.